Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is a very important country when we talk about missions, especially missions from South Africa. It's a bordering country to us. It's a country where there is so much suffering, crime, corruption, sickness, disease, any kind of bad thing you can think of. It is rife in Zimbabwe. But it's not just a bad place. A lot of people see Zimbabwe as this, really as a hellhole. But there is a lot of beauty in Zimbabwe. And traveling through Zimbabwe, you will see a lot of greenery, beautiful small mountains, but there are beautiful little mountains everywhere, big rocks that are plunked all over. And it's a wonderful country to go to. There is some wildlife. A lot of the wildlife has actually been poached or just killed, wiped out because of people who hate God and His creation. But it is a wonderful place. When you talk about Zimbabwe, I like to start with this quotation from Operation World. Zimbabwe's desperate situation would be farcical were it not so tragic. Suffering has reached unprecedented levels. The present territory of Zimbabwe was first demarcated by Cecil Rhodes' British South Africa Company during the 1890s, becoming a self-governing colony as Southern Rhodesia in 1923. By means of intense guerrilla warfare, Rhodesia was said to be overthrown, resulting in independence of Zimbabwe in 1980. Zimbabwe was effectively a one-party dictatorship under the rule of Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF until 2008. After the corrupt ZANU-PF seized power, Zimbabwe has been devastated. Hyperinflation was at a point calculated at 230 million percent, with a printing of $500 trillion notes. The government knocked 16 zeros off the currency, but the currency became worse than useless. The country has since been dollarized. That's quite hyperinflation, isn't it? 230 million percent. You have people calling themselves starving billionaires. In fact, they have starving trillionaires. You could have any amount, really, of Zimbabwean money, and you would still be poor. Unemployment reached a low of 90%, or a high of 90%, and those who did receive wages were not paid in a currency which was of any use. And even today, the unemployment rate is very similar, and people are not being paid salaries. You can be a teacher and not receive salaries for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, and still go to work without receiving any money. And maybe you'll receive a little bit, like 10% of your salary, but most people are way, way, way behind in their salaries. Yeah, you can see a Zimbabwean stack of money that was the equivalent. Well, it was about $1,000 back then, but it's really worthless money now. It's of no use. Oh, sorry. So because of this, there is some legitimate cases of poverty. When we talk about poverty, there are different kinds of poverty. There is self-inflicted poverty, and there is legitimate poverty. The majority of poverty in the world, I would say, is self-inflicted poverty. And those people who are self-inflicted with poverty are not being done any favors by non-profit or non-governmental organizations who come and just give them huge feeding programs. But there are people who are legitimately impoverished in Zimbabwe. In other words, they cannot help their impoverishment. They cannot help the fact that they are suffering in the hands of poverty. So the people who suffer the most in Zimbabwe are the old people. People who had any kind of retirement plan or any kind of pension plan or something like that. Anything that was tied up in the Zimbabwean dollar, essentially, was just lost. You could have, imagine having, you know, 5 million rand to retire on in South Africa. 10 years later, 5 million rand can't even buy you a loaf of bread. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. And I've met many, many people like that. People will say, you know, I used to have two houses, and I sold my house, one house as I retired, but then the currency went to nothing and I lost everything. People who were well off, even maybe considered rich, not poor. And so we take these different items and we put them into boxes, and we call them boxes with love. And we take them to people who are older people, people whose families have forgotten about them, people who have been neglected in Zimbabwe. Here's just an example of some of them. And we go and encourage them, minister the word to them, and we give them these boxes. This is some paintings that was done by one of the old people who received boxes from us. He's actually a colorblind man, but he painted these pictures. They have since moved to the US dollar, since their own currency has become worthless. And you'll see a lot of these soiled US dollar bills all over Zimbabwe. And you used to pay $1 for just about everything. And then it became $2, and sometimes it's more than that, $3, $4, $5. Really, the US dollar is almost worthless as well today. Estimates suggest that 25 to 50% of the population has fled the country. I would say it's even higher than that. I would say it's maybe up to 70%. I don't know, Dr. Hammond, what you would say, but if I were to guess, I would say it's way up there. Healthcare has been in a desperate meltdown. Power failures, lack of supplies, and inability to pay workers leave hospitals inoperable. People are being operated on by torchlight in Zimbabwe. In South Africa, we have power cuts, and your power might go out for 2 or 3 hours, and people complain and moan and all that kind of thing. In Zimbabwe, your power might go out for the whole day. It's not uncommon. In 2008, more than 100,000 people were infected with cholera. Over 2,000 people are dying from AIDS every week, and there are around 1 million AIDS orphans. Land redistribution changed Zimbabwe from being a food export country to being food import dependent. Before independence, white settlers built agricultural output, employing and housing up to 2 million people. But obviously these people, because of their race, mostly have been driven out of the country. And many of them fled to Zambia. And when the Zimbabweans were heavily persecuting and pushing out white farmers, the Zambian government actually opened their borders, and many of the white farmers flooded into Zambia, and then they were sending food back into Zimbabwe. And within their packages, they were actually saying from an ex-Rhodesian or from an ex-Zimbabwean. And the government found out about this, and so they banned those supplies from coming in. The Mugabe endorsed seizure of over 5,500 white-owned farms allowed over 100,000 war veterans to settle in over 10 million hectares. And when I say war veterans, I'm using the word incredibly loosely. I'm only using it because it's the word that they use for themselves. Thousands of people are now squatting on what was once fertile farmlands. This violent revolutionary land redistribution also took the lives of over two-thirds of the country's wildlife. I wouldn't be surprised if the number is higher than that as well. And all over, not only people, but also animals, not only whites, but also blacks, were severely hurt. If you were from the wrong tribe, you would be, well, massacred. If you were part of the Matabele tribe, basically from Zulu descent, those who went and lived in Zimbabwe, it was a huge massacre under, do you know who was the man in charge? The man who is now the president. There are a number of theological seminaries, but funding is scarce. The church is under threat by a rapid increase of African traditional religions and African traditional practices. This is a theological seminary we visited, and you can see the certificates that they are holding. They're like a lot like the certificates you received at the BWS. We gave it to those who could pass the Bible exam that you all wrote as well. There are quite a number of them who did not receive certificates. And a lot of those are not standing in the picture as well. I would say nearly half of the people who wrote the Bible exam in this Bible college failed it. And so what do you do when you have a country like this? You have a country where there is immense suffering, sickness, and poverty. People are suffering unprecedented levels. People are dying from hunger. I was once sitting with a certain man, and we were sitting in his garden, and we heard some birds chirping in the trees, and he said, you know, a few years ago, you wouldn't have heard the birds chirping in the trees because the people were just eating everything. They were eating everything. People were dying of starvation all over. So you have such a desperate situation, and then you add religion on top of it. Every religion that you can think of, you can find in Zimbabwe, and all of them have the same message. If you want things to go well for you, come to us. Come to our religion. So you have Hindus, you have, who knows what this is, it's a mosque, You have Islam. You have all these different religions. You have Branhamites. I don't know how many of you know what Branhamites are. If you find those, they're Jehovah's Witnesses. Or every kind of religion and false doctrine you can think of is in Zimbabwe. But I think that the greatest damage is done by those who claim to be Christians. Those who claim to be followers of Christ. They are actually damaging people more than almost any other religion in Zimbabwe. This is one of the books that we've taken in, The Second Greatest Lie Ever Told, which deals with false religions compared to Christianity. The ZZC, or the ZCC, or the Zion Apostolic Church, or the Apostolic Church of Saint whoever, you get different forms of this. This ZZC, or the ZCC, church gathers over here in Harare, the capital of Zimbabwe. And in this particular area, you can see these lines on the ground. There's a square. It's called the Square of Blessing. And they'll line up for weeks on end to pray in the center of that prayer because they believe that if they pray there, they will get blessed by God especially. Here's an example of some people praying on this, they call it a mountain. It's really just a rock. And these women are all praying over here. This little girl over here, she has a cerebral palsy. You see this over here, these green, screen little, flask. It's filled with tea. Special tea. Anointed tea, in fact, that they would have bought from their apostle or prophet. This is a footprint. There's a toe. It goes down to the heel over there. They say that God walked on this mountain, and that's why you can receive special blessing from it. This is how you buy airtime in Zimbabwe. Over here, you can go on your online banking and buy airtime, or you can go to the shop and you can get an airtime bill. Over in Zimbabwe, you buy these cards. And on the back of the card, you scratch, it's like a scratch card, you get this number, you type it into your phone, and then you receive airtime. Now, on all of these, you get this verse, John 14:14. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it. Now, it's great that they have a verse on the back of something that is so common, like an airtime scratch card. However, this verse is telling of the spiritual climate in Zimbabwe. This was in one person's house who took this picture. 2011 declarations. I've come too far to quit now. Not now, not any time. Romans 8:37. I am blessed no matter what. Galatians 3:14. I like this one. 2 Corinthians 8:9. I was poor, now I am rich. Rich is better. Apparently these are all the scripture verses. You'll get these miracle crusades happening all over in Zimbabwe. And I'll comment more on this as we go on. Zimbabwe has faced numerous elections with no shortage of fraud, intimidation, violence, and destruction of property. This is not uncommon. When election times come, people run. It's just very normal. I was there in 2012. And they were coming up to the 2013 elections. And I spoke to one young man and I said to him, so do you think ZANU-PF will lose the next elections? And this young guy said to me, no. We voted against him in 2008, but then they chased us, and we learned our lesson. We won't do such a thing again. And that's the truth. There is state-endorsed violence and even murder and frequent human rights violations that target people of non-ZANU-PF parties. And the media, social activists, all these people are targeted as well. And this is commonplace during election time in Zimbabwe. In 2008, a power-sharing agreement with opposition party and likely the winner of the 2008 elections, MDC, saw Morgan Tsvangirai, a former trade union leader, become prime minister with Mugabe retaining presidency. This inclusive government has in fact brought progress to the country since 2008. So in 2008, there was this election. ZANU-PF lost, the MDC took power, but because of ZANU-PF's violence, they decided to share power. But that never worked. ZANU-PF just dominated completely. But because the MDC had a bit of say in what the country was doing, there was a bit of progress within the country, and so shops started to fill up again, and people were hopeful for Zimbabwe. In 2013, there were more elections, but more violence. People were hopeful that there would be a change. People were hopeful that ZANU-PF and Robert Mugabe would be kicked out. There were big rallies. This is the leader of the party, MDC, Movement for Democratic Change, Morgan Tsvangirai, and people really believed that he would win. But during election times, there was corruption. People who were voting were not voting in private. And when they were counting the votes on the voters' roll afterwards, people who were over 100 years old, people who were already dead, had apparently voted. How does that happen? How do dead people vote? Well, of course, corruption. People who are no longer alive were said to have voted for ZANU-PF, and that's how they won their elections, by using the votes of dead people. Make sense? These are some of the voting cues. And you can be sure it's not secretive what's going on in there. Now, on top of all of this, you have some prosperity preachers over there who are making millions, millions of dollars. I'm not exaggerating, off the people. This one in particular is called Hubert Angel. And you can see the name of his crusade, Become a Money Magnet. He's the man who had the who does the money miracles. So you go to his crusades and all of a sudden money will miraculously appear in your bank account. Prophet Makandiwa is the name of this individual. Judgment Night. You can be sure it's got nothing to do with the judgment of God upon sin. It's got to do with judgment of your poverty, judgment of your sickness and all that. These are the stadiums that he fills out, week in and week out. Yuvid Angel has a car that is worth $1 million. These are some of the big boys in the prophetic movement in Zimbabwe. Become a strong man in tough times. Isn't it interesting that they call themselves a strong man? Somebody else is called a strong man in Mark chapter 3. Jesus Christ found him. Well, after some time, people who had taken farms started to lease them out to white farm owners again. And Mugabe said that those who had been given land-seized farms were leasing them out to white Zimbabweans and accused his own officials of being involved. Some of my ministers are being mentioned here. They are refusing to remove white farmers from their constituencies. We are told that chiefs are also involved in land deals. What annoys us is where our indigenous farmers sublease to the very same white farmers we took our heritage from yesterday. Make no mistake about this. This is not a white versus black thing in Zimbabwe. This is a communist thing. This is an ideology held by a political power that wants people to suffer. I want you to understand that. If you don't understand that, you will misunderstand communism. The issue is never the issue. Right? The issue is never the issue. Racism is never the issue. Taking land from whites is not the issue. Yeah, it happens, but it's not the issue. The issue is the empowerment of these people to crush and rule the rest of the country. Mugabe wants his people to suffer. It's essential for him to make his people suffer. Why? So that he can maintain power and brainwash them en masse. There was the experiment done with, you know, Pavlov's dogs. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. You give a dog a bowl of food and you ring a bell, the dog will salivate and eat the food. Right? Give him a bowl of food, you ring a bell, he'll salivate because he's going to eat the food. Eventually, you don't need to give him the bowl of food anymore, you just ring the bell. And he'll start to salivate because he thinks the food is coming. So it was basically discoveries in mind manipulation. What happened to those dogs was there was a flood in the laboratory and the dogs had to basically tread water for over a day. They suffered immensely and they were, some of them drowned and they were starving and all that kind of thing. And what they found in these dogs was that they had almost lost their sense of life. They were dead, they were dull, kind of, and they could be easily manipulated. And so they started to practice these things on human beings as well. And that's why in communist countries, what do? They like to keep people tired by wearing them out, constantly bludgeoning them. They keep them confused by promising them hope. Promise you hope. It's going to get better. And then it never gets better. And in a country like this, as with all communist countries, there's one media station, one channel of television, one input of radio, so that you can always think that your political party is going to liberate you and do good things for you, but they never will. They want you to be confused, and they want you to suffer so that they can brainwash you and manipulate you and ultimately take your money. Finance Minister Mr. Patrick Chinamasa has urged foreign investors to consider doing business with Zimbabwe, assuring them that no one would take 51% of their money. Why did he say that? Well, he was referring to the country's empowerment program, under which foreign companies must, by law, localize control of ownership of at least 51% of their Zimbabwe operations. In other words, if you are a foreigner, you cannot own a business in Zimbabwe. 51% of your business must belong to, actually, the Zimbabwean government. Not only so, but the political leaders of Zimbabwe and the friends of the political leaders are doing very well for themselves. The mayor told councillors that part of the loan... let's ignore that slide. Mugabe's 90th birthday was celebrated by a lavish stadium party costing 11 million rand. One reporter, Kathy Buckle, reported that the first big scandal came before Christmas when we heard that the CEO of ZBC was earning $40,000 a month at a time when civil servants such as teachers are earning around $500 a month. Turns out that Mr. Dube, CEO of Premier Services Medical Aid Society, has been earning a basic monthly salary of $230,000, while 13 other members of their senior management had been getting $870,000 between them every month. This comes at a time when fee-paying members of this medical aid are having to pay cash for x-rays, scans, blood tests, and other services because their medical aid cards are being rejected for amounts as little as $40. And right now we have President Mnangagwa. On the 21st of November, 2017, Zimbabweans celebrated with jubilation, cheering, shouting, dancing, flags waving. The occasion was the overthrow of Robert Mugabe. This wasn't too long ago. Robert Mugabe, 93 years of age, was finally overthrown by this man, Mnangagwa. However, before all of this took place, Mnangagwa was actually an ardent supporter of Robert Mugabe. He was on and off a member of ZANU-PF for about 50 years. In fact, at one stage, he was the personal bodyguard of Robert Mugabe. He was kicked out of vice presidency in 2017, which might have made him a bit bitter towards Robert Mugabe, but make no mistake about it. This man, who is now the president, has the same ideologies as Robert Mugabe. In fact, I am of the firm opinion that Mnangagwa taking over from Robert Mugabe was a plot or a ploy to preserve Robert Mugabe. If somebody who truly appreciated justice took over, they would have prosecuted Robert Mugabe, but they never did. They never did. And let's not forget that this man, Mnangagwa, is responsible for the slaughter of about 30,000 Ndebele people. He is personally responsible for that. You know what his nickname is?
The Crocodile.
The Crocodile. Yeah, that's right. You know why it's called the Crocodile? Well, just because of his personality. He was a guerrilla fighter. He used to kill people, often, frequently. And because of his political shrewdness as well. After his so-called election as president... he was asked by a Sky News journalist about the controversial past of ZANU-PF. And he said, "I do not regret, ZANU-PF does not regret requiring our land again." Make no mistake about it, he is not in a state of remorse or repentance or anything like that about what he has done in the past. Aubrey recently returned from a mission to Zimbabwe, and he reported that on the surface, Zimbabwe seems to be doing well. They are telling the police not to harass people who are coming through the country. I have gone through about 90 roadblocks traveling through Zimbabwe, one mission alone. 90 roadblocks. And at each one, they're looking for bribes. They want you to pay some ridiculous kind of fine for something, much like you experienced today at the border crossing. Those are real things, right? people trying to make us pay fines for all kinds of things. So at the moment, they're not doing that. They're not making people pay fines. They're trying to make it seem like it's a nice, peaceful country. However, life is in Zimbabwe is actually in a hopeless spiral. There is no real money with which to trade. There is no circulation of wealth. There is no industry. There is no farming going on in Zimbabwe. There is severe lack of food in the shops. What they have done is they have released a bond coin. So the bank has said, we have US dollars. Right? We have US dollars, but we're not going to release them. We're going to give you a promissory note that's equivalent to a US dollar. And so they release these to the public to trade with. The problem is they don't actually have the US dollars to back up the promissory notes that they are leasing out to people. On top of that, people have, on the black market, duplicated these promissory notes. So people are basically trading with non-money. They might as well be trading with monopoly money. They're trading with money that has no value whatsoever. They have these, you saw the picture here, bond coins. They tell them these bond coins are the equivalent of a US dollar, right? But there is no US dollar to back them up. They can't trade internationally with these things. They can't take them to the bank and get their US dollars back. The situation is hopeless. It's like dropping you in a country where you are not allowed to farm, you're not allowed to start a business, and you have to trade with monopoly money. That's kind of like Zimbabwe right now. These are people lining up at the banks to try and get money from the banks so that they can go and purchase basic items. And Aubrey will tell you more about what the situation is a bit later on. On the 26th of October, 2018, one reporter said this, going shopping after a week is frightening. The prices of almost everything have gone up, not by a few percent, but 200 or 300%. In the past 3 weeks, rice has gone from $2.40 to $7.90. A tube of toothpaste has gone from $1.29 to $3. A tin of fruit or vegetables from $2 to $5. A jar of coffee from $12 3 weeks ago, then $17, and today $23. Inflation rate is insane. Things are going up astronomically. I mean, imagine it. Say you go shopping this month for your groceries, and you pay 3,000 Rand for your groceries, just to put a number on it. Imagine that goes up 200 or 300%. Next month you're paying 10,000 Rand for your groceries. You're not earning more money. Just the price of everything has just shot up. That's what's going on there.
And you talk about American dollars.
American dollars, yes. 2 years ago, people were rioting in the streets and calling for international attention because of their immense suffering. At the time, I commented on these events. What we now have in Zimbabwe is a situation of people who are sick and tired of tyranny, poverty, and lifeless existence. Many are finding their voices and crying out for justice. But the main focus of their negative attention is on a dying dictator, Robert Mugabe, and not the secular humanism and Marxist ZANU-PF that he represents. And that is the problem. If you've been following the news in Zimbabwe, you will see, over the past 5 years, there's been an increasing hostility towards Robert Mugabe. He must go, he must go, he must go. Why? He's causing the suffering, he's causing the suffering, he's causing the suffering. Wrong. He was not causing the suffering. He was the face of a Marxist, socialist, humanist political party that has an agenda of keeping people in suffering. And all that's happened is the face has changed. That's all that's happened. Reminds us of South Africa, doesn't it? Zuma must fall. Zuma must fall. Zuma must fall. Oh, whoa, 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 wait a second. Cyril Ramaphosa's taking all the left. Whoa, what's going on over here? It's a change of face. In fact, it's worse. Ramaphosa's worse than Zuma. Thankfully, there is hope for Zimbabweans. We praise God for the faithful ministers of the gospel who are declaring that there is peace with God through the cross of Christ. In Christ, we have peace with each other. We can even have peace when we are persecuted by evil men and women. We praise God for Christian brothers and sisters who remain positive and show the love of Christ to those around them in their dark and sinful, sin-soaked world. I've met some of the humblest people I know in Zimbabwe, some of the most content and happy people in Zimbabwe, people who love their country, They love their people. They have no plans of leaving their country, even though they are suffering immensely. And it's only by the grace of God that such people are there today. And by the grace of God, those people will flourish, those people will continue to persevere, and the wicked will be like chaff that the wind blows away. And there will be freedom for God's people. I like this verse when I think about Zimbabwe. The Lord is king forever and ever. The nations perish from his land. O Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that the man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. May that be our prayer for Zimbabwe, that God will hear the cries of his people, those who are suffering, and that they may know that God is just as evil dictators are removed from their oppressive power. Aubrey? Aubrey is not there. Does anybody have any questions about Zimbabwe before we move on? Thoughts? Yes.
How come there's so many educated people there that couldn't make a living here and ended up as horrible as, because I've met one or two of them.
Yeah.
Met a cobalt that apparently had was a doctor in Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that might be a bit of a stretch, but but there are a lot of very well educated people. Well, people who have degrees and qualifications that cannot work because there is no money to circulate within the country. So you have people who are teachers and they have bachelor of education degrees and that kind of thing, but they don't get paid. So they're desperate, so they come here. But they cannot really work here legally, a lot of them. Because you need a special worker's permit. In order to get a worker's permit in South Africa, you need to have a special skill. So a lot of them are working here kind of illegally, actually. So that's what you see some of the time. Other times, people are just desperate to get any kind of work that they can get. So I do believe there are pretty well-educated and well-trained people who are working just any job just to get some money, and a lot of that money they just send straight home again. Aubrey, would you like to share about what's going on in Zimbabwe from your recent experience?
Yes, I would quickly. I do not have PowerPoints, but I do have some souvenirs here. If you'd like to be a billionaire, tonight's your chance. Yes, just tell you that the Zimbabwean dollar, I said, worth one time. The same like the American dollar, sir, they said, but stronger. I said the Zimbabwean dollar, I said, at one time was stronger than the rand.
The Rhodesian dollar was three times the US dollar back in the 70s.
Okay. So there you get the idea. This is original. $100 billion. You can have a look at that. So imagine what it will do to a country. What hope is there? And even the government now. So I've recently been, not just myself, Toby has been with me. Toby's elder sister, Talita, have been, Aliska have been with me, and then the other guy from America, Daniel de Villiers. As we, last year we went, not the previous year, 2017, we went through about 50 roadblocks. You know, they stop you. Let me just tell you how it is to go through a police stop. They check everything. So Joseph was there. They said 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it is super hot. They want to check the light. So they check the light at the back where the number plate is. 12 o'clock. No, there was very little clouds, but anyway. They said the light is not bright enough. It's a $20 fine. You must pay. You know how much is $20 in that country? You just dust it off, said, oh, now it is fine. But yeah, Joseph got away. So they look for every mistake. I've been there with from David Frew and Joseph. So the one time, just to give you background, they said, the vehicle said there's only allowed to be two people in front. Okay? We were three in front to get the fine. The next roadblock, They give us another fine. There's a passenger sitting next to the driver. So they are just full of nonsense, giving us fines like that. But how's the people doing? You know, I've been seeing, the woman have passed away. He was in his 90s. He was, I think, 96. But this is a few years ago. He had a farm with buffaloes, with a lot of big animals, leopards and things on. So he said, look outside, there's the buffalo. It went crazy. They just imagine you lose everything. But this year we have been there. The police didn't give us any problems. But as we're driving, the wildebeest have a long distance tank in. So we filled up with diesel in Zambia. It's more expensive than Zimbabwe, but you never know if you're going to get diesel. So we move around in Zimbabwe. We went to minister with a special old age homes. Toby and I had a big team. Toby and Talita and Aliska stay behind ministering to the old people. And they had an incredible time there doing exercises and sharing the gospel and things with them. And then we went to a rural area where we did some ministry. Some of your ministry got cancelled. There was typhoid and cholera in the area where we minister. And that's not the sickness you really like to get. But so we were quite dangerous. And then you need to buy water. So water companies was making a lot of money. But as we went back from Zimbabwe on our way back to South Africa, the fuel crisis hit. They did not get fuel. Do you know what's the price of fuel currently in Zimbabwe? A liter of the petrol. Want to take a guess? No, in South African rand. 46 rand for 1 liter of petrol. Sorry?
16.
No, 13 something.
13.
Yeah. 46 rand. And that, if you want to pay that, you must be willing to stand in the queue for more than 24 hours. That's how long the queues are. Just to give you the maximum amount that a person can draw, if you're standing the whole day in a queue, from this money, this is the new current money that is, you can, I don't know what you can do with it. It's not even toilet paper is more worth. But anyway, the maximum amount of that money is bond coins. It's $20 per person. For a business, a big business, they can draw in one day 30 bond coins. Can you imagine? Imagine getting money, you work very hard, and at least you're getting some money, but as long as you go outside the country, it's worth nothing. Nothing. Where are you going to accept that money? So how's people moving forward? So that's what the current situation is of Zimbabwe. So please pray for Zimbabwe as people like the prophets or the they call themselves PhD ministries. Have you heard about that? Prophetic healing and deliverance. That's what it's standing for. Ministry is flourishing. The other day I met one and I said, I had a very short conversation. I can't remember we drinking coffee at Magabin or whatever, but he said he's believing in Magaya, I believe. He said he likes to go to his church. I said, you must tell that guy to stop lying to you. He said, why? I said, because you're working there. You're giving a lot of money and he's promising riches, but you come and work in my country. He said, oh, I see the problem. So they know that you must be honest with them. But yeah, there's a lot of sadness in the country. I don't know. I don't know if you have questions about what they've shared, especially the old age homes, maybe. Any questions? Difficult to find any parts for a vehicle? Difficult to find?
Impossible.
Yeah, impossible. I want to be positive. He wants me to be very realistic, so unfortunately. But yeah, people will trade. They make very nice, I don't want to say statues, because it's not statues, but carvings out of wood. They'll trade something that they've worked on a week for a shirt. They'll do anything for food, some of them. So yeah, and maybe I can just send, and the businesses, you can just imagine, Spar, Pick and Pay, there's a Spar, there's a Pick and Pay in shops like that, they must make money. But now all the vendors, the people that's coming to sell on the street, is selling vegetables, so they kill everyone. The big businesses cannot flourish, and the small...
It's covered.
The small businesses, they can also not flourish. So it's just the country is going down. And you know what? When I was in a rural area, in the city, people were rebelled against them. They went down in last year after two or three days after the elections. People were gathering together. They saw it was a riot. Unlike South Africa, they took out, they took guns and shoot into the group of people. They killed some Zimbabweans. So they, but there they were right. But in the rural areas, they will not say anything bad about the government. Remember I told you guys, if you're in Zimbabwe and somebody asks you, what do you think of this government? You zip your lips. I know nothing. You cannot say I know nothing, but you don't speak about things. They might be people to inform, and they'll not maybe endanger your life, but the hosts of you. They endanger, but in the midst, there's people making a change. And I think John should have told you about Pastor Kafias. There's a lot of people that's positively influencing their area, reaching them with the gospel of Jesus Christ. So thank you, John.
To give you an idea of some of the results of the national brainwashing, if we can put it that way. So I've had a lot of people who will defend Mugabe. Oh, you know, he's a peaceful man. I've heard people say that. You know, he's not so bad. He doesn't allow homosexuals or abortion or these things in our country. What are they doing? They're latching on to some kind of hope from their government, just to try and, I don't know, maybe shield themselves from the pain that they're actually feeling. And when you hit the people with cold, hard truth, it sometimes shocks them. I was in a particular Bible college, and he was speaking about humanism. They asked us to speak about humanism, and so I said, well, okay, but, you know, I have to speak about political humanism as well, which deals directly with what's going on in your country. They said, that's fine. And so I spoke about it. And I said, what about your country? Do you see humanism in your country? And they just sort of looked at me and they stared at the ground and nobody wanted to say anything. Eventually somebody said, yeah, maybe a little bit, but you know, it's not so bad here. And at least Mugabe doesn't allow homosexuality here. And there's peace over here. I said, you know that he is, you know that ZANU-PF has slaughtered about 30,000 Ndebele, he has caused mass starvation, kicked people off their farms, driven away tourists, slaughtered thousands and thousands of animals and all these kinds of things. And nobody wanted to make eye contact with me. There was just this dead, deafening silence over there. It was incredible to see something like that. You speak to people there, you see what it's like when people are quite literally brainwashed. It's very sad. Alright, any other questions before we move on?
Do you think that what happened in Zimbabwe will happen in South Africa?
I think that's what a lot of people want to happen. And I think that's the direction a lot of people are pushing it. Whether that will happen, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I know of people that say it would never happen because of institutions like AfriForum and Solidarity.
I don't know.
Maybe you can just paint it. I just want to show him souvenirs. He gave me this souvenir last year. One of the old people said, please take some aeroplanes. Take some of his boats, and you can see he's put some quite amount of time in. So I said, hey, well, see, I'm not going to take this, going to break. And this one did break, but we fixed it again. But anyway, I said, I'm not taking. So he wrote a letter to me. He said, please, next time when somebody gives you something, take it. Even if you throw it out of the window around the corner, just take it. Do not say it. But I would like you, maybe if you have time, just look at the detail. And this guy, I can spend 2 hours talking about Uncle John. Very funny guy, but yeah.
He's the colorblind artist who painted the pictures I saw you.
Yeah. But yeah, if you have time.
Let's look at it afterwards.
Okay.
Now, another important country in our mission, and in Africa really, is Zambia. And I'm sure Dr. Hammond will tell you about his pleasant experiences in Zambia at some stage. Dr. Hammond, what was the first time you went to Zambia?
1987.
So from 1987 until now, there has been work in Zambia. So it's over 30 years. Frontline Fellowship has been working in Zambia. And it's an important country. It was an important country to David Livingstone as well. David Livingstone said, I beg to direct your attention to Africa. I know that in a few years I shall be cut off in that country which is now open. Do not let it be shut again. I go back to Africa to try and make an open path for commerce and Christianity. It is for you to carry the work which I have begun. I'll leave it with you. And in the 1850s, David Livingstone explored Zambia, Angola, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, traveling across southern and central Africa from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean. He walked in the places where we are driving today. 1855, he discovered Victoria Falls. Here you can see David Livingstone on Livingstone Island and some artistic depictions of what he saw. And this is what it saw. How many of you have ever been to Victoria Falls? Just Toby. Yes, okay. The frontline people have gone there. It is truly magnificent. It is powerful. There are few things as powerful as this in the world, really. If you go there just after the rainy season, it's so, so loud. You have to shout at the person next to you if you want to be able to hear what they're saying. You stand there and you just see these floods and floods of water coming. You can't believe there is so much water in one place, just constantly pouring over. And it's magnificent to see these trees over here just surviving as millions and millions and millions of liters come, and the mist from the impact below comes up and it covers you, drenches you. You couldn't get wetter if you jumped into a swimming pool. It totally drenches you in water standing there. It's very beautiful. This is actually from the Zimbabwe side. It's shared by the border of Zimbabwe and Zambia. I took this picture. I didn't realize this at the time when I took the picture, but over here you kind of have an outline of the South African map. So you look at this picture of Victoria Falls. And so on both sides, you have statues of David Livingstone, and he's a very well-respected man, especially in Zambia. In 1873, he died in Zambia, and in 2013, we celebrated the 200th anniversary of the birth of David Livingstone by going to Livingstone in Zambia. And as we prepared to have the celebration, we went to meet with the chief of Livingstone. He's over here, Chief Mukuni, number 19. And when we were there, it was actually quite an interesting thing. You go to this man, and before you go to him, you have to go through this whole, like, long ceremony before you can get to him. You have to go through these, you can see we're in a grass hut over here. You have to go through these different grass huts, and you have to clap three times, and you go through the different ones, and you have to get on your knees and all these different things to show him respect. And as you get in over here, you see this man, and he's sitting on this throne with this leather hide on the throne, and he's sitting there with his iPad doing his emails over there. So it's quite interesting. Very, very nice man, quite a humble man, actually. And so there's this tree just outside of his hut. And the story goes that when David Livingstone first came to Livingstone, Chief Mukuni number 2 was there. So this is Chief Mukuni number 19. Chief Mukuni number 2 was there. And he heard of this white spirit that was walking around. And so he said, I don't want the spirit to come into my house. but I will let him come and meet me under this tree. And so he met him under this tree and found out, oh, he's actually just a man. And so they apparently had a fairly good relationship. David Livingstone had a unique gift, I think, not only to acquire languages, but to understand people's customs and cultures. You would learn from the local people. You would sit outside a village or something for days just learning about the people, and so that he could come and befriend them, learn from them, and ultimately to share the gospel with them. And he's a well-respected man in Zambia. This is the David Livingstone Teachers Training College. This is a statue of David Livingstone outside of the postal service. This is the David Livingstone Memorial Presbyterian Church. He's everywhere. And the people truly respect him. And a lot of people have negative things to say about missionaries. A lot of people have negative things to say about David Livingstone. But I think the places that he has impacted the people actually still love him. In fact, a while ago, I think it was a Christian Action who did the survey of who is the greatest friend that Africa ever had. And the overwhelming response was David Livingstone, the greatest friend that Africa ever had. First time I went to Zambia was in 2010. I was quite a young Christian. I'd just gone through the Great Commission course, like you all, and about 6 months after that, I went into the western province of Zambia to a place called Lukulu. And you have these different places, God's Blessing Investments, Obama Haircuts, and all these different shops over there. And we ministered along the Zambezi River. This is the mighty Zambezi. We actually camped in a Catholic compound that night. And the first time I started ministry was in Zambia. This is just under a mango tree. You have these beautiful mango trees growing all over the place. And I sat down next to this man and I just started to share the gospel with him. Now the interesting thing about this picture is this guy sitting next to me over here, his name is Gift. He was my interpreter. And Gift was quite a nice guy, but his understanding of English was very limited. I remember one night I said to Gift, "Gift, are you hungry?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "What would you like to eat?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "No, what would you like to eat?" He said, "Yes." And so I thought, oh my goodness, is this guy going to be my interpreter? He really struggled to understand what I said. But over here, he was interpreting without hesitation. I mean, he was really going for it. So sometimes you just have to be very prayerful with your interpreter and hope they have the gift of interpretation at that particular moment. So we also show the Jesus film in these areas. It's very effective, very powerful. You have people showing up, hundreds of people to come and watch the Jesus film. This is in a soccer field. But the locals were very hesitant to come because of all the mosquitoes. And if they are hesitant to come because of the mosquitoes, you must know how bad it really is. We have done a lot of ministry to children in Zambia. And in ministering to children in rural parts of Zambia really opened my eyes to know that children can comprehend a lot more than what we give them credit for. I've shared the gospel with these children and many other children like this. And they understood the gospel better than many adults. Many, many adults. In fact, a big, big problem that I've encountered in Zambia is that people believe in a works-based salvation. How are you saved? Oh, we keep the Ten Commandments. Oh, we follow the teachings of Jesus Christ. And we've gone to some places. We've spent 2 or 3 days just talking about salvation with the same people from morning to afternoon, every single day, just talking about salvation. Because it's ingrained in them that they have to somehow work for their salvation. We're talking about church leaders, talking about pastors, we're talking about elders in the churches. But the children, they understand it. They understand. We need Jesus. Biblical Principles for Africa is another very important resource that we've brought in. Zambia used to be under a dictator named Kenneth Kaunda. But since Kenneth Kaunda, there has been a lot of freedom. And because of this, the need for discipleship and training in a biblical worldview has increased. And a lot of people will work in areas that are difficult to access and difficult to reach. But when persecution or opposition lifts, some of those ministries will leave as well, leaving a wide open door for humanists to come and educate the people. But that's wrong. We believe that Christianity touches every sphere of life. And that's why this book, Biblical Principles for Africa, is so important. but we teach people to apply the lordship of Christ to every area of life. And just like you all have gone out and done, you've taught people to go out and evangelize. This is a pastor's wife. She said this is the first time she's ever gone evangelizing. She thought people would laugh at her, but she realized that she doesn't have to be afraid of people anymore. People are often liberated as they go out and evangelize. They have this this fear of man, this fear of people. And maybe you've experienced that too. That actually, hey, you're not going to die if you go out and share your faith. Maybe you will, but probably not. Right? I mean, how many of you have actually been severely insulted since your time here? Maybe the worst was at Mari Stopes. You got a couple of rude signs out the window or something like that. But actually, a lot of people are open to listening, isn't it? And the worst opposition you get is rejection. No, thank you. I'm not interested. I could take this somewhere else. I mean, so what? So what if somebody hurts your feelings a bit? So what if somebody rejects you? Christ accepts you. We've gone and not only taught people, but brought them some forms of relief aid. This man, he wanted us to take a picture of him like this. This is some corn that we brought them. And this is, we brought them the seeds, and then they planted it, and this was the product. David Livingston worked to eradicate slavery all over Africa. However, there is still modern-day slavery today. There's modern-day forms of oppression. Mari Stopes has presence in Zambia. Mari Stopes is not legally allowed to commit to do abortions in Zambia, but they do. There are abortions there. In fact, you know, there's only two countries in the whole of Africa where abortion is legal. You're in one of them right now. The other one is very opposite of us, Tunisia, right in the north. It's meant to be illegal in Zambia, but it still happens. There's also spiritual oppression. This over here is a madman. This is a pastor that we were working with. And in this particular area, this is the western province of Zambia, people are afraid of crazy people because they believe that they are possessed by spirits, or if you're a Christian, you believe they are oppressed by demons. A lot of the time, just the language changes, but it's the same worldview behind it. Maybe one of these days Hunter will explain. He has a very good way of explaining form and function. So they believe that these people are somehow possessed or oppressed. And this pastor was terribly frightened. After we left, he said, "Oh, we're so afraid. I thought that man was going to do something dangerous to us. I'm very much afraid of the spirit world." Another example is found over here. He has an old man who was neglected by his people. His roof was leaky. We donated that wheelchair to him and this tarpaulin and some clothes to him and a mattress and blankets and that kind of thing. And we asked some of the young men to please help this old man and rebuild his roof. Of course they didn't. In this particular area, old people are actually looked down upon. Now, they're different. Depending on where you go in Zambia, there will be different cultures. It's foolish to talk about something like African culture. It's not a thing. Zambian culture is not really a thing. I mean, just to contextualize it a little bit for you, is there such thing as white culture? No, Daniel is very different to the rest of you. Believe me, he's probably in culture shock. He thinks we're all weird. And Marty and I are very different. She comes from an Afrikaans. I bet you if I had to stay in a home, I'd start getting a bit frustrated with the way things are done. We just have a totally different culture. So a lot of people misunderstand things in Africa. There's no such thing as African culture. There might be some similarities that are transcendent, but they are very different. So anyway, over here, these old people are oppressed, and there is one ministry that actually is dedicated to helping older women in this place. Because when a woman gets too old and she uses her use or her value, they accuse her of being a witch and they will beat her to death. I've actually seen video footage of that. It's very gruesome what people do. A missions organization wrote to David Livingston asking, "Have you found a good road to where you are? If so, we want to send other men to join you." David Livingston replied, "If you have men who will only come if there is a good road, I don't want them. I want men who will come even if there is no road at all." And sometimes that is required in missions. We have to go where other people are not willing to go. Say things other people are not willing to say. Do things that are uncomfortable. Go to places that are difficult to reach. This is one area of Zambia, a very rural area, and not a lot of missionaries go there. This is the hospital. It's not a veterinary clinic. This is the hospital. And that's a chicken inside the hospital. You'll get more sick in some of these hospitals than you will if you stay out of them. This is another rural area of Zambia that's very dear to us. We've been discipling the people over here for a very, very long time. I've been involved with this church, with these churches in this rural area since I started missions in 2010. And Frontline has been involved with them for even longer than that. The bishop in charge of basically all of these people, he is, I don't see him in this picture, but he came to our Great Commission course, I believe in 2006, or was it 2004? One of those.
I think 2004.
Maybe 2004. So anyway, he came to our Great Commission course, and he went back home. And after he went home, he planted his own farm. He reported to us, and he said, "You taught us that Christians must work. And I do not want to sit back and wait for handouts. I'm going to work to feed my family and my community and to the people in my church." And so this is just a part of his farm. And this is a cassava that he is busy growing. He's busy growing, putting a fish pond. This is how they charge their cell phones over there. That's some sugar cane. Wonderful sugar cane and some, I can't remember, some fruit that I've got over there. And so he's working very hard to support the people in his community. Somebody once saw the picture of his sign, and they donated the sign to us to take to him to replace this old sign of his. After today's border crossing simulation, can you imagine how difficult it was to get the sign into Zambia? It was very difficult. But we got it in. We didn't pay anything for it. We got two in, actually, yeah. There we go. There we are, presenting the two to the church. There is the signboard that is now replacing the old one. We're on Biblical Worldview Summits in this area. We teach people how to evangelize, how to share their faith. And in this particular area, one day we were... Where is this man now? I think it's this man over here. We were teaching on repentance for 2 days, and people were just not, they were just not understanding it. We were teaching and teaching and teaching. And eventually they said, "Listen, there are some people who want to respond to your message." So we said, "Okay, they can respond. It's not something we often do, but we'll allow it." And so we said, "Is anybody who wants to respond to this message of repentance by turning from their sin, and as a sign of that, publicly repenting and trusting in Christ?" And a whole lot of people put up their hand, and they openly called upon the name of the Lord. And after that, a man walked to the front of the meeting we were having, and he was sort of dragging his wife by the hand, and she came and sat there with him. And he said, "This is my wife, and we have been fighting. And I've been questioning whether or not this is the woman I must be married to, because we are fighting so much. I've been wanting him to leave her. But, because I've been hearing about today's message of repentance, I want to say this is a woman that God has given me to marry. And I want to repent of the way that I've been treating her." Now, that might be strange for us, but culturally that is kind of acceptable over there. Even though I'm sure it was embarrassing and humiliating. So, we were like, "Wow, I couldn't believe that, you know, these people were doing this." And there was a serious sense of sobriety in the atmosphere afterwards. I remember it was immediately afterwards that there was lunch, and nobody even knew what to say. We were all just sitting there in quiet and silent. I can't believe this just happened. Everybody just publicly repenting. These people confessing their sin to everybody like that. And it must have been like 10 or 15 minutes we were just eating and nobody saying anything. Eventually I just said, "That was pretty hectic." And then everybody else just went, "Yeah." And then it was just silence again. I mean, there's just such sobriety in the atmosphere after that. Anyway, that man and his wife went home to their two sons, very rebellious young boys. And they said, this is what we've done. We've repented. We want you to join us in repenting of sin. And so they did. And they became the top students in their school. And that husband-wife couple now has a ministry of going village to village, helping other people who are struggling in marital problems.
Sure.
Praise the Lord for that. We also make them write Bible exams. So yeah, you can see the certificates of people who have passed those Bible exams. Here are some of the women who cook for us. So generally, what you will eat is shima, or we call it chapap, but it's much, they make it much more stiff. You eat it with your hands, and some kind of vegetable. The worst is when you have to eat kapenta. I don't like that. I really don't know how many of you know what that is. Like little dried fish. Just the whole, they just take the little fish and they dry it on concrete, and then you eat it like that. Everything, yeah. It's very scratchy and a very strong fish smell. I don't like that. And then eggplant.
Which is good.
No, I don't like it. They mash it up into pulp. Sorry for the analogy, but it is like snot. It's like, it's the texture, it's the look, it is horrible stuff. And it's,
And what does it taste like?
It's got this, it's like, it's just slimy. That's just all I can tell you that it tastes like. And it's, and you can't just swallow some of it, you know, it's like that substance, you swallow a bit and it just
all goes
keeps going down the throat.
It's like one of those moves.
That's
no,
horrible.
Just about the fast, John.
Yeah?
That is very well known in Zimbabwe and very greatly respected, the bishop.
Zimbabwe or Zambia?
Oh, Zambia, sorry.
You're talking about Rupert?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you tell her? Maybe you can just say something.
Yeah.
I was open air preaching and he was translating for me in the marketplace in Zimbabwe. Ah, in Zambia, it is a big thing. They call you, can ask that. Tuobi, they call you, you must come and preach to our area. And they recognize, we listen to your voice on the radio. So he's very well known, but the most humble person I know.
Yeah.
He's too humble. He's very, very humble.
Yeah, he's the leader of these people in this rural area. He could easily go and start a ministry in one of the big cities in Zambia, but he doesn't. He chooses to stay here. He travels to the city every week to do radio ministry, to do TV ministry, and then he goes back to his rural area afterwards. In fact, I've got into trouble more than one occasion with police, and he just starts speaking to them, and they recognize his voice. Oh, we recognize you, man of God. Okay, just keep driving. So they just leave us because of it. It's quite nice. This is some of the sleeping arrangements. I once got bug beds from these. I don't know how many of you have ever got bug beds before, but I had bug beds all up my arms, in my body, on my legs, on my face, on my head. It was terrible. Yeah, it's like flea bites almost, but lots of them. And I had to preach the whole day the next day, and I just had these insanely itchy bug bites all over my body, and so I'm preaching the whole time, scratching myself. I mean, can you imagine just watching somebody preach while they're just scratching themselves just the whole time? Like, some of you actually want to scratch yourself right now just watching it.
So,
it was very horrible. Sorry?
Did it happen in only one night?
One night, yeah. I was just covered in bed bug bites.
The previous night?
Well, the first night I slept in there, I was covered in bed bug bites. And the next day, I didn't sleep in there. So this is how they hold their conferences in this. This is their church. And I think 2 years ago, these two individuals who were not yet married were busy binding the Biblical Preaching Handbook, the first edition, they were probably arguing as they are doing this. And then we got to bring this in. And these are some of the interpreters that often interpret for me. And this is the man I was talking about earlier, who went to the front with his wife. And so these men interpret for me, and so we got to give them copies of these books as well. Putting Feet to Your Faith, important book there. Children of Zambia, this is teaching them the importance of a Christian work ethic. We were washing our car. And there's Joseph riding in the back of this vehicle with all these people and the chickens. That's how it is. If you have space in the car, you can always fit more people in. And even if you don't have space, you can still fit more people in. Or chickens, or anything. A big problem in Zambia is witchcraft. And not only witchcraft, but the replacing of witchcraft with pastors. This is Conrad Mbewe, and he preached a very famous sermon, "Are we pastors, or are we preachers, or witch doctors?" And he contrasted a lot of preachers with witch doctors, and that is really true today. He has one of the big prophets. He's actually a Zimbabwean prophet, but he is big in Zambia. PhD Ministries, PhD, Prophetic Healing and Deliverance. He's one of those prophets who abuse women when he tries to do deliverance on them. He also speaks about encountering different demons and all that kind of stuff. It's because of him that you see a lot of these strange practices happening in the rural areas of Zimbabwe and Zambia. His ministry trickles down into these rural parts. We've held Africa Christian Action conferences in Zambia. In 2017, I took my wife there and Francis on our Africa Reformation Overland Mission to celebrate the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther nailing his 95 Theses to the door. My wife was pregnant with Jackson at that time, actually. A lot of people were very unhappy with me for taking my wife into Zambia. And they got to minister at the school, saw the mighty Victoria Falls. Dr. Hammond joined us as well to speak about five solas, doctrines of the Reformation, the importance of returning back to the Bible. There's lots of lively interaction, discussion, and debate. People are sick of the prosperity cult, the prosperity nonsense that's going on. And so it's encouraging to see a lot of pastors are turning away from the nonsense that's coming to them from television, a lot of Western television as well, wanting to return back to the Bible. This picture was taken in a church that is a prime example of why we need a modern-day Reformation. Before anybody got up to speak, there was a hype man. If you know what a hype man is, it's a guy that gets the crowd all worked up and ready. And so he came to the front and he said, "Everybody, I want you to look at your neighbor and say to your neighbor, 'Today is today.'" And everybody looks at their neighbor and they say, "Today is today." He said, "Today is today." And they all said, "Today is today. Today is today. Today is today." And they got so worked up because apparently today was today. And that's just the kind of thing that that goes on over there. It's nonsense. It's just really trying to get people all worked up. So we were able to distribute a lot of literature, took our vehicle into a rural area. We donated this tent to these guys. So that's where they hold their meetings. Some of the rural Reformation conferences we held, showing the Jesus film. I showed the Jesus film in this particular church building. And often what happens when you show the Jesus film is at the end, a lot of people stand up and walk away before you can preach the gospel to them. So they come for the entertainment, they leave before the conviction. So they come for the entertainment, but over here it started raining very heavily, in fact. And so nobody wanted to leave the building. So everybody had to stay and heard the gospel, and many people called upon the name of the Lord. This is the children from the Sunday school in the church I was going to donated a bicycle to this bishop. He's the one we were telling you about earlier on. I got to see the mighty Victoria Falls. David Livingston, during his studies, wrote to his sisters, urging them to seek to be uncommon Christians, that is, eminently holy and devoted servants of the Most High. Let us seek, and with the conviction that we cannot do without it, that selfishness be extirpated, pride banished, unbelief driven from the mind, every idol dethroned, and everything hostile to holiness and opposed to the divine will crucified, that holiness to the Lord may be engraved in the heart and evermore characterize our whole conduct. To those who said that the work at home must be completed thoroughly before any missions can be engaged abroad, Livingston responded, "All men have the right to hear God's word. No nation ought to hoard the gospel like a miser." Does anybody have any questions about Zambia? Or about missions? Or about Zimbabwe? Perhaps I should take a moment to talk about how we get into these countries. Now today, we had border crossing simulation, which was very realistic actually. Everything that happened to you happens at the border crossing. All of a sudden, you need paperwork that you don't have. All of a sudden, the border agent tells you you need to buy things that you don't need. How many of you got your photographs taken? Alright, that wasn't necessary at all. Didn't need it. Yellow fever certificates? Well, we didn't really care, but since you brought them to us, we, you know, made you sign them and do all kinds of funny things with them. How many of you lied to me today? A lot of you lied to me, actually. I know that it was kind of just a game.
I thought it was part of the thing.
I know it was kind of just a game with that, but you don't want to be lying. And in fact, I caught, I think, almost all of you out on your lie. Not because I knew you were lying, but just by asking you a follow-up question. One team said they were from National Geographic. Another team said we're tourists, which isn't too bad. I mean, it could be true, but since we told you you're trying to enter into South Sudan, might have been helpful if you knew something about South Sudan before you said that. What are you going to go tour South Sudan? There's nothing to tour here. Are you crazy? So yeah. So you have to be careful with what you say. How many of you got something stolen? A lot of you, a lot of the teams got something stolen. All right, you get your Bibles stolen. All right, you trusted your border agents.
Yeah.
Never trust border agents. In fact, you don't need border agents even. You could have done today without them, in fact. It would have taken you longer, but you could have actually completed the challenge without using them at all. A lot of the documentation we told you needed, you didn't actually need. Certifying documents. How many of you went to go get your documents certified? A bunch of you? Yeah, we just made that up. Didn't need to get your documents certified. I only said that to the groups that I wanted to mess with because I didn't like their stories, so. But that's what they do. They make you do ridiculous things. And sometimes all you have to do is ask, what is the purpose of this? Can I see any documentation for this requirement? Or something like that. You want to be polite, you want to be happy, you want to be humble, but you also need to push back sometimes some of these things. How many of you got through the border? No one today.
The water.
The foot and mouth? Was that the foot and mouth disease thing?
We went into the water.
And then we realized they can't.
And then they realized that they couldn't let us through, so we couldn't run.
Because we didn't have third party insurance for the vehicle.
But they didn't notice. They didn't notice at all. The game was just about over.
Okay. Yeah, that happens as well. You'll go, you get third party insurance for your vehicle. And you want to go through the border, eh? What about for your trailer? Can't get into our country without this. Or they do a spot search on all your goods. Where's this on your temporary import permit? Any other observations from the border crossing? You think that was frustrating? Was it frustrating?
Yes.
I'll just have states on that.
It is very, very frustrating. It is very frustrating. Sometimes you want to turn around and go home at these border crossings. Seriously. I felt like that.
So are you supposed to, like, lie when they ask you stuff or to do stuff or not?
No, I don't lie to them. You had no reason to lie to me today. There's no reason why you can't go visit churches, distribute Bibles in South Sudan.
So you could have said the truth.
Yeah. But all of you chose to come up with the most...
No. I just
some of you the most ridiculous lies.
I just said we were handing out literature for free.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say it as gospel tracts or Bibles.
Yeah.
Your members,
only when they are serious follow-ups would eventually admit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. You want to be vague. You don't want to give away unnecessary information. Even if you say, I'm going to go visit a friend, that's fine. They don't necessarily need to know everything that you're going to do, especially if it's a corrupt bunch of people who are just going to abuse you. You don't need to offer them information with which they're going to abuse you. So, we intentionally made it frustrating. And I was a bit of a jerk to you guys, but I was actually quite polite compared to the way some of these people can be with you. very mean, very rude, hostile, shout at you in your face, tell you that you're lying about the most basic things. I've been told I'm a liar. You can't go preach. You're too young. There's no way you're preaching in this country. What are you doing? I'm preaching. What else am I going to do? I'm preaching. I'm not going to lie about that. No, no, you're not. God walks away. Comes back later. You still want to tell me that you're preaching? Yes, that's what I was doing. Okay, stamps my fingers. You know, just obnoxious people like that all the time. You guys want to do that again?
Yeah.
Yes, I do want a bonus round, now that I know the things that I know.
It's helpful. It's helpful when you know the things that you know. Yeah, it's helpful to have a bit of experience. Helpful to go there planned, prepared, well-informed. Speak to other people beforehand about what's required so that you know what kind of nonsense they might come up with. You can ask Joseph about border crossings. We've gone and they've asked me for documentation that doesn't exist. And I've sat there for ages arguing with the people. I don't have the documentation. I can't get the documentation. Documentation you want doesn't exist. Oh, and they fight. But you just have to keep on. Can't give in. Can't pay them bribes. Some of you wanted to pay me bribes very early on. Offering me money over the counter. At least be discreet about it. But don't do it at all. Sometimes it's helpful if the person's about to go on a lunch break or a tea break, because then they just want to get you out of their hair so they can go and have something to eat. Sometimes you just got to persevere until lunchtime, and then you can go through. Yes?
We had a guy who said the guy wanted a bribe, so he decided he's not going to give. He has time on his side, so he's just going to wait it out. And what he did was, he was so polite and friendly, and he told the guy, you're so helpful, and then I know you're going to get it on time. I'm trusting in you. And it took him 3 days to. He came, went back home, came again, sat there, telling the guy how helpful he is and stuff like that. And at the end of that 3 days, the guy just went, did it, and gave it to him.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to be patient. One of the worst things to do is get impatient. Because they see that, and then they realize, oh, this person's about to snap. So they actually push you even harder. Yeah.
Where do you draw the line between pleasing the person, not doing anything wrong, and just refusing? For instance, we were at a difficult border, and at the end, the guy, Aliska, said she's a teacher, or something in that line, and the guy told her to sing. Now, it's not wrong to sing, and would you want to please the guy just to get through, or how far would you go to please the guy not doing it wrong?
Yeah.
Would you say no?
You can turn it off. That's a good question. You really just need wisdom, proper guidance, discernment in the moment. It's hard for me to say it right now. But at the end of the day, you need to get through. That's it. You've got to get through. If you're confident that you can, that if you got confidence in the situation, I'm not going to sing for this guy and I'm going to get through, then you know, don't sing. But sometimes maybe you got to sing. Very often, it's very, very seldom I've ever used an agent. I think maybe twice ever I've used an agent. Sometimes you got to do it. It's just, there's nothing you can do without them. But most of the time, you can get along without that. Important that you are calm, that you're confident, that you take control of the situation. That you don't let anything get you down or distract you. Sometimes you'll get out your vehicle and you'll have about 10 border agents hassling you, trying to help you. But you have to take control of that situation. You can't let them dominate you and pull you around and make it seem like they're helping you. You have to take control of that situation. You can't get rude or arrogant about it. So in that situation, you might get out your vehicle. You have about 5 or 6 of them going on. You just choose one. You, sir, what's your name? Muhammad or whatever. What about you? What's your name? John. Oh, John, just like me. That's my name as well. John, if I need anything, I'm going to call you, okay? Yes, call me. I said, but right now, I actually know what I'm doing, but I will call you if I need you. Thank you very much. All of you, thank you very much. You can go. There's someone over there who needs help. I'm going to go over here. And you just ignore them and you keep on doing your thing. You just got to take control of the situation. dealing with a difficult government official. To be firm, to give him what he wants. Yes, sir, here we go. Anything else that you want? Anything else that you need? Just, you can't be afraid or secretive or try hide something. In fact, it's helpful if you're assertive because you can direct him to what you want him to see. For example, we have this trailer out here. On the side of the trailer is a kitchen. Everything else in the trailer is literature. I don't want them to see my literature because they're probably going to try and make me pay some ridiculous duties for it that I don't actually have to pay. And so they'll say, what's in the trailer? And so I'll say, oh, look over here, there's my tent on top over here. It's very nice. You can sleep two people. My wife and I, we both can go in this over there. My gas is on the back, and I've got a kitchen over here. Do you want to see? Now I'll unlock the kitchen, open it up. I'll show them how everything works over here. That's where we keep our tin things over there. And I'll show them how everything in the kitchen works. And so sometimes I'll even show them the back of the trailer that has my luggage in it. So there's there, and there's my luggage over there. I haven't shown them the compartments with all the literature, but I'm showing them what's in the trailer. And so eventually they say, okay, you can get in the vehicle, you can go. So it's helpful, actually, if you're assertive, but you're being polite.
I was just like, one time we went into Mozambique, and it was very difficult because you get to the border and everyone is speaking Portuguese, so you can't understand the language, but the guy at the border was very lazy, and we thank God for lazy border officials, but they had papers there, and they had an original copy. So everything must be certified, like you see today, but the original can't be certified. They said, this one is not right. It must be certified. You can't go into the country. It is a big problem. So now the guy obviously wants to show, I'm not going to pray and break out. It is sad, so what can I do? He said, it is the big problem, but for now, it is fine. You can go. So they just, you must just talk. Did you tell them when the police stopped Daniel de Villiers in Zimbabwe when he was sitting next to the luggage? Or you want to tell them?
So we were in Zimbabwe and the police stopped us. Our vehicle was full. The back seats were full. And there was just one space for Daniel to sit. And Daniel was buckled up. And he had all of this stuff, like all sort of piling on top of him, and the police said, no, you can't mix goods with passengers. Just pay a fine. So he said, no, it's okay, he's comfortable over there. So he said, no, but you're mixing goods with passengers. So he said, no, we're not mixing goods with passengers. See, his seatbelt is around him, he's okay. And so they said, can you open your window? And so Daniel opened his window and closed his window again, and the guy said, it's okay, you can go. So sometimes you just got to keep talking to the guys. Or you just say something like, once I was stopped because I hadn't yet put my third-party insurance sticker on the vehicle. But I had it, I just hadn't put it on the vehicle. They said, oh, it's a big problem now, $40. Failure to display third-party insurance. So I said, no, man, listen, I've got the thing here, I'll just put it on, don't worry. So he said, no, you do not tell me what to do. It's failure to display, you must pay a fine. So I said, no, don't be unreasonable, I can't pay a fine for something like that. Just tell me to put it on and I'll put it on. He said, okay, let's go talk. So I go with him to his little hut. So now we must talk. They're saying, now, I said this to some of you today, is ignorance of the law, excuse for breaking the law. So I said, no, it's not. So he said, yes, just because you are ignorant of the law does not mean that you should break the law. You must pay a fine. So I said, no, but you are not being reasonable. I'm here to bless your people. I'm here to help people in your country. I'm a minister of the gospel. I'm giving people free literature, free resources. Do not do this to me. Do not hinder the work of me. So I said, okay. I will give you a warning. So I said, okay, thank you. He said, but I must write it on a piece of paper, and the warning will cost you, I don't know, it was about $5 or something. So I'm like, okay. So he starts to write this warning out. I said, wait, let me stop you right there. He said, I do not know what you are doing. I said, but I'm a man of righteousness, and I do not do anything underhanded, and I do not do things that will break the law. And I'm not going to lie about anything. Because what he's actually doing is he's asking me to pay him a bribe. So he said, what are you saying to me? I said, I'm not going to pay you for that piece of paper. He said, you want to pay the full fine? I said, I'll pay the full fine rather than pay you for that paper. He said, then you will pay. He opens up his fine book. I said, then you make me pay, but I'm very disappointed in you. He said, you are disappointed in me. I said, I'm very disappointed in you. Because this is something so small and you are making me pay this ridiculous fine and you are hindering the work that I'm doing. He said, just go. I got up and I could leave. Sometimes you won't always get away with it, but in that case, I was able to get away with it. You have to just sort of know what to say in the moment, I suppose.